Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavaza, and for today we are talking about the industrial sector and how it could possibly benefit from the continued rise in e-commerce trends around the world, because it seems that, you know, as more and more people are out there trying to shop, trying to make sure that they don't go to physical retail locations and adhere to social distancing, new norms and rules, that, you know, there's a lot of infrastructure, a lot of systems and, you know, supply chain implications that are coming into play that may benefit the industrial sector. And to sort of run us through what's going on out there, we are joined by Tom Walker, who is the co-head of Global Real Estate Securities at Fund Manager, that is Schroders, and he's going to be, you know, letting us know what's actually going on in this sector. Tom, greetings to you. I understand you're joining us from the UK.
Yeah, that's right. Joining you from a lockdown London.
No. Thank you so much for joining us on today's show. I think, you know, just from that point of view, what are you seeing in terms of this e-commerce trend that is rising at the moment? It's forced a lot of people to adopt e-commerce. I think in South Africa, they estimated that in 2019, that e-commerce was only about 1.4% of total retail sales, whereas by now they already estimate that it's about 5%. Very small numbers, but already more than doubling just in the last 4 months alone here in South Africa. I don't know, what are you seeing from your vantage point in the UK?
Yeah, well, we're seeing a really dramatic impact of COVID-19 on real estate markets around the world, whether it's South Africa, the UK, or the US. And you're seeing the virus increasing the demand for some assets and then decreasing the demand for others. So obviously, as we all work from home, the need for offices is not really necessary anymore. Conversely, you know, our lifeline to the outside world, whether it's groceries or, you know, toys for the kids or whatever, you know, you need to order from Amazon, that is all coming through a distribution warehouse. And that's where the industrial sector comes into play. So industrial, I would probably add alongside data centers as being two of the real beneficiaries of COVID-19, as we see increased demand for, you know, their space that they can give their customers. And I think that, you know, whereas in South Africa, you've got relatively low levels of e-commerce, you know, as you mentioned, sort of 2-3% in the UK and other markets with, if you like, stronger logistics operations, the numbers are very high. So in the UK, before the virus, we were looking at about 20% of all retail sales being made online. Consensus estimates before COVID thought that that might peak at around 30%, maybe in about 5-10 years' time. But now estimates are actually increasing up to as much as 40% of all retail sales being made online. So there really is a dramatic change as a result of the virus.
Could we then, you know, relate what you're saying to some of the indications that we've seen either in the media or just some announcements coming from, you know, certain companies? Because I think Amazon is on a very big hiring drive at the moment. I understand about 75,000 jobs that they're looking for, you know, globally, expanding their logistics networks, all of that stuff. Do those sort of things coming out from a company like Amazon, does that directly speak to the trends that you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely, it does. I mean, you know, Amazon are increasing their infrastructure that they need to be able to, you know, ensure a good customer experience if you order things online. And because of the huge quantum of increased demand that they are seeing, they need obviously to hire extra staff and they need more space. And that's where it's interesting from a real estate point of view, because they are demanding more space, which obviously increases the price of those assets that they are looking at. I think, you know, two important trends to think about is, firstly, a lot of people, and in particular elderly people, so the kind of aging demographic, we're always quite hesitant about using e-commerce, in particular for groceries. But what we're seeing is that, born out of necessity, they are now having to use platforms like Amazon or some of the, you know, supermarkets, online platforms to have their food and goods delivered because it's absolutely essential for them. They are now finding that it's a very easy thing to do. Their experience has been very good. So they're likely to continue that trend even when the virus has gone. And so again, that's a permanent increase in demand, which is why the likes of Amazon will be hiring those extra staff to house and facilitate the distribution of those goods. So I think that's kind of the first point. I think the second point, when you think about distributors like Amazon, and it will be the same for companies in South Africa, is that the most valuable land, the most valuable industrial warehouse you can find is always next to the mass point of consumption. And when we talk about a mass point of consumption, that's really just another term for a large city. You know, you never know where the goods are made. Are they manufactured in China, Vietnam, you know, maybe in Eastern Europe, wherever it might be. But we know where they are consistently consumed. So if you can own an industrial warehouse close to where the consumer is, then you have a very valuable asset in your hands.
I was actually going to ask, you know, how do you think businesses or individuals with, you know, ready capital can actually take advantage of the trend? And you've already started talking about, you know, some of the warehouses close to, you know, quote unquote consumption centers. Does that mean, you know, a rebuilding of, you know, warehouses or maybe a repurposing? How are you seeing that?
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think it will lead to a mass rebuilding of warehouses because if you think about how a city is constructed, it's largely residential. There might be schools and hospitals. And so to suddenly tear down assets in a city to put industrial there, it's not going to be a very popular move. It's not going to win politicians more votes because you will be potentially removing homes. And that's what's very interesting to us is that there is often a very low level of supply of distribution warehouses close to cities. And when you consider from a distributor's point of view that 50% of their cost is largely in the transport of goods, clearly that means then the closer that they can be to the consumer, the more profit they're going to make. And that's why you will always see very strong, consistent demand for that distribution warehouse, either in a city or right on the edge of it, just because it gives you that access to that very large consumer base. We as investors are not really very interested in industrial warehouses out in the countryside where you can build lots of them, where there's lots of supply, and they're not very close to that point of consumption.
I think the other question then to ask is, you know, from this trend, because you mentioned at the start data centers and you also are now talking about warehouses. I'm just thinking about the fact that to fulfill, you know, e-commerce orders and the like, there's a whole system and just, you know, supply chain that needs to also be in place. What other opportunities are you sort of seeing, I guess, along the lines? I'm asking because I've seen, you know, certain ride hailing players in our market, Bolt in particular, have started doing fulfillments of, you know, some of the online orders as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an interesting trend. And that's really playing to what's always sort of, you know, deemed to be the most expensive part of the kind of a goods journey. So for instance, if you're going to order some football boots and it's going to, you know, come into a warehouse somewhere, that last mile closest to your home is always the hardest for the distributor to get it to you. And that's where these ride-hailing apps are coming in, because what they're able to do is they're able to go to the distribution warehouse, pick up the goods, and then take it that last mile to your house. But the key thing, you know, whereas in theory they might be disrupting traditional logistics companies, where we feel, you know, what we think is very interesting is that that good still needs to be picked up from a distribution warehouse. And all of the goods will need to come in on a large lorry and get delivered to a distribution warehouse, which is, you know, close to where you live. It's from that journey, that last mile, which is where the ride-hailing apps might come in. But that still doesn't change the value of owning a distribution warehouse in a large city.
And are there any threats Because I'm just thinking to myself, how fundamental this opportunity actually is. You know, is this something that sort of flash in the pan that will only be existent for now whilst people are in this period of lockdown, at least for the next maybe 6 months to a year? Or is this something that you see as sort of a long-term sort of opportunity?
Yeah, it's an interesting point that I think there are two elements to consider here. Firstly, all that we think that the COVID-19 has done has just accelerated disruption. This disruption was always going to occur. It was just going to occur over a slower time period, over a longer time. But what we're seeing is that disruption has been pulled forward. So I think that when you consider people ordering their groceries online or getting more goods delivered to them online, that is a permanent structural change. But one of the things, so with that in mind, you'd think, right, well, I want to try and own industrial space anywhere. But that's where the error and the mistake can come into play. Because what we see is happening is that, you know, going back to owning an industrial unit out in the countryside, we believe that slowly over time, they're going to become less valuable. The reason is because we are seeing with the advance of technology and in particular robotics, that what you're able to now do is use the cubic volume that is inside a distribution warehouse. So you can start stacking the shelves up very high. You know, robotics can then take those things off the top shelves and then deliver them to your house if you like. Previously, it was only the floor area that distributors would be able to use. So what we think that this will do is that it will potentially slow the demand for space in the industrial sector. And those assets that are furthest away from the point of consumption will be most at threat. Because what you're going to see is that valuable industrial unit close to the city, you can start using, you know, the full cubic volume of that shed to then distribute to people, which will then mean you may not need an industrial unit out of the city. So I think that's a really important trend to consider.
It's actually a very interesting one because I've had opportunity to visit one of the biggest distribution centers that they have here in Johannesburg for the biggest e-commerce player, that's Takealot. And it's actually quite massive. I think most of the time when we report these things, we talk in the size of football fields. And I think that thing is at least 4 or 5 football fields. And the type of organization and the number of goods that they have stacked in that place. And as you're saying, they've already started implementing, you know, some robotics and conveyor belt type of systems just to maximize on the amount of space, you know, that they're talking about. What other risks do you see?
Yeah, I think that outside of kind of advances in technology, you know, that's where the risks lie. You know, arguably one day could you be in a position where when you're ordering your football boots, actually it's kind of a completely kind of driverless experience. A, you know, autonomous truck drives it to a distribution warehouse, and then there is another kind of, you know, driverless vehicle which will drop it at your house. You know, I think there will be disruption in the supply chain. I still don't see any disruption in where the goods get delivered to, which is, you know, close to where people live. And I think that's what always in the real estate world gives us great confidence, is that actually if you own a piece of land close to where lots of people are, there is always going to be a value to it. You know, today, some of the highest value use is going to be industrial. Tomorrow, it could be something else. But if you're close to people, there is always a demand on that land, as opposed to owning it outside in locations where people are not as densely populated.
Tom, can we talk some mechanics for a moment? You know, because you are in that real estate sector and you're looking at things from a trend point of view. For someone who's listening to this and thinking about how to maybe get in on the trend or find a way to create some value from the trend, how do you propose going about it? Because I can imagine, you know, there are a lot of different ways. You can either invest in a real estate investment in a rate, you could, you know, maybe put your money in some stocks that have exposure to property. You can actually go and build something, or you can buy a warehouse. From a mechanical point of view, how do you see you know, possible investment happening to take advantage of the trends?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I sort of meet investors around the world, I often find that people have a very large bias to their domestic market. And I think that that is potentially, and funnily enough, with real estate, it seems to be a lot more than you might find elsewhere. So, you know, your normal investor would understand that they need to diversify their equity exposure or their fixed income exposure, and they're very comfortable to do it globally. But with real estate, there seems to be quite an emotional attachment to your domestic market. So I think the first thing that people need to consider is just diversifying away from your domestic market. I think the second thing that you need to think about is really just looking ahead at trends that are taking place in the market. You know, we've seen over the last 10 years with the growth of e-commerce that there is just simply not as much need for retail space anymore. We are going to see now over the next 5 or 10 years that because of working from home and all the advances that we've seen since the pandemic started, there is not going to be as much need for office space anymore. So, you know, when you're thinking about those investments in real estate, are you going to be investing in retail? Are you going to be investing in offices? Those are some very important questions that you need to consider. We much prefer to invest in strong cities around the world where we feel that they are very resilient. Whenever there's a crisis, whether it's a financial crisis or a pandemic like this, we see far more resilience in the value of those assets in the key cities. And then we're also very interested in subsectors which have very strong, you know, growth supporting the demand for it. So data centers, you know, the world's creation of data is growing exponentially. So all of that data needs to live somewhere, which is why we like data centers. Similarly, e-commerce, it's a long-term trend, which is why we like industrial units. Then you can think about things like healthcare or education. Again, very long-term trends. People are going to be, you know, continuing to get sick, continue to grow old. That will lead to increased demand for aged care facilities and hospitals. Similarly, there's, you know, very strong, you know, need for education around the world. So we really like subsectors where you have a strong long-term structural support for it, as opposed to the office and retail examples, which is where I think historically they were very interesting, but they've effectively now been disrupted. So I think that's the one of the key questions that people need to think about, is that long-term growth that you're going to see from your investment. And just on that last point on diversification, you know, a lot of investors, for instance, here in the UK have learned at their expense that they didn't diversify. And we've got things like Brexit, you know, you've got European issues. And so it always reminds you of that need and the importance of diversification in your real estate assets.
For South African investors, you know, perhaps looking to diversify outside of South Africa, what cities are you looking at globally?
Yeah, so, you know, we look all around the world. We have a very quantitative process. We look at economic growth. We look at innovation. We look at environmental risks. And we're able to quantify all of those risks and then effectively come up with a ranking of cities around the world. On our Schroders Global Cities website, we publish the top 30 cities that we see around the world. And if I was to generalize that top 30, it's quite interesting because it's really a battle between the coastal cities in the US and then some of the large Asian cities, and in particular those in China. And then you think about kind of the troubles that are going on between the US and China at the moment, and you can see that there is this battle for supremacy, if you like. Like, as both countries are, you know, creating lots of innovation and advances. But I think that, you know, I would highlight the US and China as very interesting places for us to allocate capital to at this point in time.
Actually, there's something else I'd be keen to get your thoughts on, and it's the reduced demand in office space that you highlighted just now from a real estate point of view. We've seen the disaster that was the WeWork IPO, you know, valuation of, you know, more than $45 billion, you know, coming down to, you know, sub $10 billion regions and the like. And, you know, Adam Neumann, all of his disasters. But the actual business model itself, Do you think there's still substance in that business model when you now think about the fact that going forward, there will be less demand for fixed office space? Are we likely to see business models like that, perhaps, you know, rising again, businesses like Regus and WeWork?
Yeah, I very much think that they will. You know, we've in our team, we've often spoken about whether WeWork are the Nokia of mobile phones. So if you think about Nokia, they came out with the first mobile phones, but they just didn't monetize it. They just didn't quite kind of make it work globally. And then you look at someone like Apple, who absolutely nailed it, and they monetized the idea that Nokia came up with. And I think the same could occur with flexible office space. It is absolutely clear that flexible office space is exactly what corporates want. They want that flexibility to come in and take a desk for 2 hours or 2 weeks or 2 years. You know, they just want that choice, and they want to make the choice, you know, the day before, if you like. So I think the idea is absolutely fit for purpose. It is what the corporate world wants. But whether WeWork are able to monetize it and create profit, it looks unlikely at this stage. But definitely the idea is here to stay, and we will see more and more flexible office space companies providing corporates with choice and flexibility. And so then, you know, again, back to us, when you think about the office exposure you might consider investing in our opinion, it has to be well located in the center of a city next to transport communications, so it's easy for people to move in and out of. If you own an office building in a weak location where there is not much demand, and you know you only have a lease for 2 days or 3 days from companies who are in, you know, the flexible office space, it's going to be a very problematic asset for you to try and create a value and resilient income stream from.
So outside of the office spaces, and we've already spoken about logistics supply chains for e-commerce and touched a little bit around the need for education and healthcare sort of properties. What other, you know, interesting trends are you watching in terms of the general real estate space?
Yeah, we are interested in investing in an income stream which is very resilient and has long-term growth for it. So there are, you know, a number of subsectors that we'll look at. You know, we really like, for instance, the self-storage sector. You know, one of the things that people always underestimate with real estate is the amount of capital expenditure you need to keep the building fit for purpose. You know, the hotel or a hotel is a classic example of an asset that every 2 years or so needs to be spruced up so that it will continue to attract people to come to it. An office building also requires a huge amount of capex to keep it fit for purpose. When you come down to something like self-storage, really all that people want to see is security and that it's not going to have leaks, so their stuff's not going to be destroyed. And that's about it. So you don't need to invest in the latest technology, you know, in terms of attracting people to your self-storage facility. So therefore, you know, the compound return that an investor gets because you're paying out less money in capex is very powerful. And again, if you can own that self-storage unit close to where people are located, and if there's not much supply because the demand on the land requires more residential space than it does self-storage, well, then you have a pretty strong monopolistic type position. So we like self-storage. We also like residential rentals. If you think about many of the strong cities around the world, Boston, Los Angeles, Beijing, Shanghai, Tokyo, wherever it is, it's very hard for people to afford to buy a flat or a house in that city. So those companies that can provide attractive rental apartments for people to live in, again, have a very resilient income stream, which we are attracted to. So we really think about playing in the kind of the niche subsectors of the real estate world, not the traditional office retail. It's more data centers, self-storage, healthcare, student accommodation. Those are the areas that we find very interesting.
As we end off, I wanted to just get a sense, you know, do you follow the South African real estate space? And if so, do you have a view on it?
I don't follow it particularly closely. There are a couple of companies we've met historically, which we have been, if you like, attracted to. But what we then found was that they started moving out of South Africa, doing deals in other countries. I would, you know, highlight Eastern Europe as being a relatively popular destination for South African capital. And that just concerned us because, you know, from history, from my own experience, I have seen many companies moving out of their area of expertise, going into other markets, and then that's where problems start to arise. And so, you know, there are many assets in Johannesburg or Cape Town we would like to get exposure to, but the problem for us was that they were being diluted as those companies went offshore and played in markets which we didn't think were particularly attractive.
So that was us with Tom Walker, who is the co-head of global real estate securities at multinational asset management company Schroders, just giving us a view of what e-commerce is doing to the property sector, and that your industrial spaces are likely to, you know, to be well placed to create value, you know, because of the rise in e-commerce. Talking about the fact that in places like the UK, where he is talking to us from, at the moment they are seeing e-commerce being about 20% of retail, but they're expecting that to go up to double. In fact, to go up to as much as 40% of retail, which is a lot, you know, when you compare to, you know, South Africa, which in 2019 was at 1.4% and is at the moment estimated to be sitting at around that 5%, with some projections saying that we'll get to the 10% mark. These all sound like relatively small numbers, at least in the South African sense. But when you think about the fact that that's a more than doubling in the last 4 months of what happened in 2019, you know, it gives some insight. And South African investors might do well to, you know, take some of these global trends and see how they can actually create value either in the local market, or, as Tom says, you know, look at some of the more global cities, particularly in the US and Asia, where they are seeing some strong growth. And then just ending off talking about the fact that they're also excited about what's going on in the rental space, and particularly in self-storage, and that education and healthcare will continue to serve up some demand.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
It's always good to get an international perspective just around some of the industries and sectors of business out there. And a very good discussion from Tom, particularly just cementing some of the effects that e-commerce has had in changing, you know, the nature and scope of certain businesses. Because I remember having a conversation with the head of Bolt, formerly Taxify in South Africa, and they were talking about the fact that, yes, as you know, things open up, there's now more demand. There's now more demand for ride hailing, that sort of thing, but it has not recovered to the level that it was pre-lockdown. And because of that, because essentially they are an e-commerce company, they've had to open themselves up to different areas of business. So for example, they are now doing the fulfillment for, you know, business deliveries, for example. They're also doing fulfillment for certain e-commerce or online, you know, products and stuff like that, which sort of feeds into this narrative that one of the good ways in which people can sort of pivot their businesses is to take advantage of that e-commerce trend. So, you know, going forward, it might be a good area for investors to actually be looking into, either physically investing in physical space from a real estate point of view, or just finding some place in the supply chain that you can actually take advantage of, you know, just using that example of Bolt that I was talking about. There've actually been other businesses that have, you know, really grown in the last couple of months, that have been coming up with, for example, like a crowdsourced driver's platform to take advantage of what's going on. Another thing to just consider is all the payments companies whose businesses have seen, you know, 2, 3, 4 times increases because people want payments integration. That's another part of the supply chain. You're not physically getting things from from a retail location or from a distribution warehouse, but you're just facilitating the actual payments. And, you know, you have some things going on with Vodacom and Alipay, creating a marketplace or a super app, you know, same with Yellow Pages and Yep. So there's a lot of ways in which people can be taking advantage of the e-commerce trend, because it is a growth sector. I've said it time and time again in this podcast that it's more than doubled just in the last 4 months on what it did in 2019. So there's a lot of opportunity there. So that's been it in terms of this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. And then on Twitter, we're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.